is.
It would seem that her financial backers don't want to be publicly known, but they might still be legit.
And I might be short and skinny, said Decker. Is there any way we can find out who's behind those companies?
How about your people at the FBI?
I'm not sure they're my people anymore.
Then you're stuck with the resources of a small-town police force.
Great.
Lancaster glanced up.
I heard you shoot when I was coming up the stairs. How'd you get a sight line on the guy?
His laser worked against him in that environment. I followed it back to its source, thanks to a bunch of dust in the air. Katz was lucky that Melvin knocked her down when he did. I saw the guy's scope. Sucker was super sophisticated. He could have made that shot from a mile away.
Lancaster looked up from what she was doing.
What is it? You okay?
I'll be right back, said Decker, who was not even looking at her.
He got up and hustled out of the room. He hurried down the hall to the evidence room and checked in with the officer manning it. He told the man what he wanted and was led into the cage, where the officer took him over to a shelf against the wall. The officer held up the rifle with the scope still attached. It was in a large plastic evidence bag with a department tag. Decker looked at the rifle and scope. Then he thought back to the moment it had been used. He rushed back to the room where Lancaster was.
What is going on with you?
Said Lancaster.
I wasn't the target, Mary, that night outside MacArthur Park.
What are you talking about?
Sally Brimmer was.
Chapter 56.
Eric Tyson, former military. Washed out of Ranger School and then out of the Army.
Lancaster looked up from a report the next morning. Decker sat across from her at her desk.
We just got this back from the Army. We ran his prints through all the criminal databases and got a hit. Tyson was arrested on an assault charge about 10 years ago while he was in the military. It was off base against a civilian. That's why we were able to access his prints. We checked in with the Army, told them what had happened, and they sent us this file.
Special skills?
Trained as a sniper. So you were right. The shot he took that killed Sally wasn't meant for you. He could have shot her from a mile away. Tyson was barely 50 yards from his target.
How'd he wash out of the Army? Asked Decker.
Got in with some bad company, apparently. Earned him a DD.
So he leaves with a dishonorable discharge. What's he been doing since his military days?
Lancaster shrugged.
Not sure. We're looking into it. Hope to have something soon. We can't find anything that shows he's been in prison.
Well, considering all his tats, it was not anything good that he was up to, despite never having been in prison.
Lancaster sat back in her chair.
Okay, but why kill Sally Brimmer? You never said last night.
I don't know, but I'm a huge target. He could hardly miss me. Sally was going to give me a hug when the shot came, but I'm 9 inches taller than she was, and a lot wider. Doesn't matter how close she was to me. He couldn't have missed, if I'd been the target.
He slapped the top of the desk with his palm.
I should have seen that a long time ago.
Same goes for me, but that doesn't tell us why she was the target.
She had gotten me the files I'd asked for, after you got knocked off the case.
How'd you even connect with her?
She came by to see me when my butt was sitting in jail. I asked her to do that for me, and she agreed. We met in the park. As we were leaving, that's when she got shot.
If they knew she was passing you information, why not shoot the both of you and take that information?
I don't think that was the reason, said Decker.
Why?
Because if they knew she was giving me information, they probably knew what it was. Police files. Big deal. Why would that be a death warrant for her? I could have gotten those any number of ways. Killing her wasn't going to stop that.
So you're saying she was, what, complicit in something?
Or she knew something that was dangerous to other people.
Lancaster glanced up at him.
What people?
Decker looked around the confines of the empty room.
She worked here.
Lancaster's voice sank to a whisper.
Decker, do you know what you're saying?
There are bad people everywhere, Mary. Cops are not immune. You know that.
She shook her head.
Granted, but none of this makes sense.
It does make sense. Just haven't figured out how yet. Any word on the fire at Rachel Katz's office?
We got a prelim from the arson squad. They found an incendiary device attached to a timer. They must have placed it there after they searched her office. You just picked the wrong time to make your visit.
He rose.
Where are you going?
To the hospital to check on Katz and Melvin.
Is that all?
Then I'm going to see Mitzi Gardner.
You want me to tag along?
Aren't you desk-bound after the shooting?
Well,
I'll talk to you when I get back.
They think she's going to be okay, said Mars. He and Decker were sitting in the visitor's room outside the critical care unit at the hospital.
They think?
Well, she's stable, critically stable, but at least she's stable.
Okay.
Mars rubbed his eyes.
You look beat, Melvin. Why don't you go get some rest?
No, I'm good. I napped on the couch. He stretched his long arms. They got cops outside her room.
Yeah, I know.
Mars shook his head. Why do I feel like it's my fault she's lying in that hospital bed?
Your fault? How do you figure?
Mars said, the people who shot her, they knew she was talking to me. They were afraid she might open up, so they decided to kill her. I don't push it. She's okay.
That's pretty convoluted, Melvin, and wrong. You saved her life. She'd be on a slab but for you.
I saw this red dot hovering over her face. Man, it scared the crap out of me. Then I just grabbed her and down we went, right as I heard the glass break. I thought she was okay, you know? Then I had her blood all over me.
What did she tell you before she was shot? Asked Decker.
She was really nervous, afraid for her life.
Well, she turned out to be right about that. What else?
I think she wanted to talk, but couldn't bring herself to do it. She said something about there being shades of truth.
Shades of truth? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Maybe a guilty conscience?
Mars looked pained by this possibility.
Maybe.
And she said that sometimes people have to do things that might look wrong to other people, but just seem like the only way to go for the person. And also that the truth could trap you. Decker took all this in and said,
You know, she might have been the one to impersonate Susan Richards. Mitzi Gardner was the other possibility, but she has an alibi.
If she did, then Rachel knew about her murder. That would qualify as a guilty conscience.
Yes, it would. We'll need to talk to her when she's able.
Now maybe she'll tell us the truth.
Well, almost getting killed should be a great motivator, replied Decker. And they burned her office down after searching it, so they mean business.
Mars stared goggle-eyed at him. Burned her office down?
While I happened to be in it, I had to jump out the window.
Mars gaped. You jumped out a window?
From 5 flights up. Point is, I don't think Katz has an option now.
And if she is guilty of something?
We'll work a deal. She who talks first gets the best one.
Decker stood to leave.
You need anything?
A little less excitement in my life would be nice.
Then you're going to have to stay away from me. Apparently.
Chapter 57. When Decker pulled up to the gardener's home, the gate was open, so he pulled through. This time a man answered the door. He was in his 40s, tall, broad-shouldered, and good-looking, and dressed in a suit that might have cost more than Decker's entire wardrobe. No, there was no might about it.
Yes, said the man.
I'm here to speak to Mitzi Gardner.
What about? The man asked suspiciously. This is a no solicitation area, he added warningly. How did you even get inside the gate?
It was open.
Decker took out his creds.
But I'm not selling anything. She'll know about this. I've been by before.
The man looked puzzled.
Here? You've been here?
Yes. Are you her husband?
I'm Brad Gardner.
Is she in?
She's not up yet. In fact, she's not feeling well.
I can wait.
No, that doesn't work. She's ill.
Mr. Gardner, I can understand that, but the fact is, this is a murder investigation, so time is of the essence.
Murder? What the hell are you talking about?
It's okay, Brad.
Decker looked past Gardner to see his wife standing there in a bathrobe and slippers. She scowled at Decker.
I can handle this. Why don't you get to work? You have that meeting.
But Mitzi.
She kissed him on the cheek.
It's okay, sweetie. I've got this. Trust me.
If you're sure.
I am very sure.
After her husband left, Gardner looked at Decker.
You just won't leave it alone, will you?
I'm just trying to do my job.
Isn't that what all cops say?
I don't know. I'm just one cop.
She led him back to the conservatory, where they sat down across from each other.
What?
She said expectantly.
Some recent developments I thought you might want to be made aware of.
Such as?
Someone tried to kill Rachel Katz. Took a shot at her through her condo window.
To her credit, Gardner didn't visibly react to this.
Is she all right?
She was shot with a sniper round. She's out of surgery and is critically stable. Another inch to the right, and they'd be making funeral arrangements.
Well, I'm glad they're not.
The man who tried to kill her was then killed by police.
Do they know who he is?
Yes, but Decker would go no further.
What does any of that have to do with me?
You have the picture I left you?
She appeared startled by this and sat up.
No, I think I threw it away. Why?
Good thing I took a picture of it.
Decker took out his phone and held it up. She looked at the screen.
But that's the wrong side. That's the back of the picture.
Well, for my purposes, this is the relevant side.
He pointed at the writing.
Daddy's little star. He was a very proud papa.
Gardner looked up at him from under hooded eyes.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, it was. Things change. People change. I have another picture to show you.
He flipped through the screens.
This is a picture of your father's forearm, taken during the autopsy.
Oh, please, God, I'm not looking at that.
She said in disgust.
There's nothing gruesome about it, Ms. Gardner. I just want you to look at the tattoos on the forearm.
My father did not have tattoos.
He got these after he went to prison.
She became subdued.
After?
Yeah. Here's the first one. A spider web.
He explained the symbolism.
I'm sure lots of prisoners get that one because even though they're guilty, they can't accept what they did.
She said defiantly.
Here's the second one.
He showed her the teardrop and looked at her expectantly.
What does that one mean?
She asked dully.
Travis Correctional is an all-male facility, and some of the men there get lonely, and they take out that loneliness on other men, like your father.
She blinked rapidly as she processed this.
You mean?
Yes, I do. Now here's the third one, and this is the one I really want you to focus on.
He brought up the screen with the arrow through the star.
I've seen a lot of prison tats. I've never seen that one before.
He looked at her for a reaction. For a moment, it looked like the woman had stopped breathing. Then she licked her lips, dabbed at her eyes, and looked away.
Any idea what that might mean?
He asked.
I know what you're getting at.
What's that?
The photo. The writing on the back.
She waved her shaky hand at the photo of the tattoo on his phone screen.
And that.
He sat back and studied her. She dabbed at her eyes again with her sleeve. Finally, she looked up at him.
What exactly do you want from me?
The truth would be fine.
I've told you everything.
No, you haven't.
This happened a long time ago. What the hell does it matter? Everyone has moved on with their lives. I know I have.
Tell that to Susan Richards and Rachel Katz. And your father.
She shook her head and looked down.
I'm not here to send you on a guilt trip, Ms. Gardner.
She barked.
Oh, just call me Mitzi. That's all I'll ever be, Ditzy Mitzi, an addict who was always a disappointment to her father.
She looked up at him and said coldly,
You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a fucking pig.
Turning your life around could not have been easy. She waved this off.
Doesn't matter now.
I'm also here to make something as clear as possible.
What?
People connected to this case are dying or in the hospital, fighting for their life. By my count, you're the only one left.
I told you before I could take care of myself.
I'm sure the others thought the same, but the guy who shot Katz was a real pro. Ex-army turned bad guy white supremacist type. Trained sniper. Hired to do the hit. He's dead, but who's to say another one won't replace him? And maybe you go out armed, but a pistol isn't going to save you from a long-range rifle shot you won't ever hear or see coming before it kills you.
You're just trying to scare me,
she said offhandedly, though her voice shook.
I am trying to scare you, for your own good.
I don't see how I can possibly help you.
Can't or won't?
As far as I know, my father killed those people.
How did your father feel about your drug use?
He hated it. Why?
I understand he was trying to get you into rehab.
He'd done it before, but I could never make it stick. He kept trying.
So he never did drugs himself?
Are you crazy? He was as straight as they came on that. He attacked a guy who came to our house trying to sell me some stupid weed.
Okay, your dad was picked up in a bad area of town. At his trial, the defense laid out the possibility that he was there trying to get drugs for your mother's pain.
We've already been over this. He might have. I mean, I told you before that he did his best to take care of her.
She unexpectedly smiled.
He could build anything, really. Make anything work. He built a little scooter for me when I was 10 for my birthday. I mean, he made it. Out of scrap parts. It had a little battery and a motor. He made those, too. Only went about 5 miles an hour, but I rode it everywhere.
Her smile faded.
But he couldn't build anything to help Mom. That was beyond him.
How did he know to go to that area to get drugs? Asked Decker.
He saw Gardner flinch slightly.
What?
You just told me that your father didn't do drugs, hated them. So how'd he know where to go, or who to buy the stuff? And where did he get the $500 he had in his pocket when the police picked him up?
I don't know where he got the money. And it was pretty easy to tell back then where the bad areas were if you wanted to score drugs. I already told you that. And you know that, too, from being a cop here back then.
Well, Mitzi, the thing is, he didn't want just any drugs for your mother. He wanted something like pure morphine. Stuff that had been stolen from a hospital or pharmacy, not off the street crap. And having worked the narcotics detail as a cop here, I know that there were very few people in that particular market. And you really had to know your shit to get to them.
Mitzi looked extremely apprehensive in the face of all this.
I don't know what to tell you.
And on top of that, your old man was still walking around quite a few hours after allegedly killing 4 people. You'd think the guy would have been running for the hills.
She licked her lips nervously.
Maybe he was confused or shocked at what he'd done. Or he was just trying to lie low and hope that the police would conclude what you just did.
But if he had committed the murders, he would know his DNA was likely to be under a dead girl's fingernails. It was just a matter of time before we came knocking on his door.
She let out a quick breath.
I can't explain it. It's just what happened.
Decker rose.
I'm sorry.
She glanced up at him, trepidation on her features.
Sorry about what?
Your life must have truly been in the gutter for you to have done this to your father.
I don't know what you're...
He put up his hand.
Don't bother. I don't have the patience or time for more bullshit from you.
He lowered his hand.
I think you gave him the $500 after someone gave it to you. Then you managed to scratch the shit out of him at some point and passed his DNA off to whoever paid you. Maybe your father just chalked it up to you being in a drug-induced fit. He'd probably seen that many times before. And then you told your old man where to go to get the stolen hospital drugs. Only the person wasn't there because there was no person. You probably told him to keep trying, to go to lots of different places where there was nobody either. But it was for his wife, after all. And so he did. That way, he'd have no alibi for the murders, and we'd end up finding him in a bad part of town with a chunk of money in his pocket. And when we showed up that night, you pretended to be whacked out. You'd probably already been given the gun and stashed it behind the closet wall.
The whole time Decker was talking, Gardner's eyes kept widening and her jaw kept falling. Decker continued,
I can only imagine the look on your old man's face in prison when he ran into that scumbag Carl Stevens. And Stevens tells him what his little star did to her own father.
He took a moment to gaze around at the beautiful room.
I hope it was worth it, Mitzi, but I can't possibly see how it could be.
Chapter 58. The House. The Rain. Decker sat in his car and watched his old home from across the street. The gloom of the night was actually brighter than what he was feeling. He had told himself that he could live in either the past or the present, but he couldn't do both.
Which do I choose? It should be an easy decision, so why isn't it?
His case was at a dead end, in more than one way. Gardner was the key, and it didn't look as though she was going to cooperate. Unless Rachel Katz regained consciousness with a willingness to help them, Decker wasn't sure they would ever get to the truth. So he had come here, back to where many things had begun for him. He saw the lights on in the front room. Someone would pass back and forth every so often. The little girl he'd seen, then her parents. The Henderson family. Really just starting out in life, like Decker and his family had once done. Building dreams and burnishing memories that would last a lifetime for all of them. His last Christmas with his family had been a memorable one. Decker had gotten a couple days off, and thankfully no one had decided to murder someone else that close to the holiday. They had gone to see Molly perform in her school play. It had been a Christmas version of Peter Pan. Molly had played Wendy. She had worked on her lines for 2 weeks, reciting them to whichever parent was around to listen to her, barging in on Decker when he'd been shaving or even dressing. She had carried it off without a hitch, helping others to perform their roles too, because she'd apparently memorized everyone else's lines as well. Great memory. She didn't get that from her dad. Before his injury, Decker had been pretty normal with his recall, and he couldn't imagine he could pass on the elements of a traumatic brain injury to his kid. He sat next to Cassie in the audience that night, watching their little girl act her heart out, surprising him with little things, tiny nuances that she seemed to instinctively add to her performance. She might have grown up to be a great actress. Now no one would ever know. Yes, it had been a great Christmas. They'd gone out to dinner after the play and celebrated Molly's performance. They'd toasted her with vanilla sundaes. Decker had relished every moment, but had of course believed there would be many, many more just like them. Enough to fill a lifetime of memories, even for someone like him. She would grow up, marry, have kids, and he would become the doting grandfather, or as close to that as someone like him could be. He glanced over at the window again as he saw the little girl sit on the sofa next to her mom. A book was opened. A story was commenced. Decker started up the car and drove off. He could barely see the road for the tears. He should never have come back here. It was literally tearing him apart when he could least afford it.
It's always about the next case, though, right?
Even when Cassie and Molly were alive, he had never dwelled much on all the time he had missed with them because there was always some bad person he had to track down. All the nights getting home long after they both had gone to bed, and then getting up and leaving before they awoke.
I just thought I'd have more time. Just more time.
But then again, another sunrise was guaranteed to no one, certainly not to his family, and by association, not to him. Thankfully, the farther away he drove, the faster these thoughts left him, for now. He drove downtown and stopped in front of the building where he'd almost died. Across the street was where Rachel Katz had nearly perished, lending a macabre symmetry. He checked in with the officer guarding her apartment and started to look around. He glanced across at the broken window, the blood on the couch and carpet. That told a story he already knew. Katz had mysterious backers, offshore shell companies funneling the money for her myriad projects in little old Burlington, Ohio. What was the attraction? It did make one wonder. And then there was the American Grill. There were thousands of places just like it all over the country. Thick, piled-high burgers, mammoth mounds of fries, chicken wings, pitchers of beer, large-screen TVs for sports. There would always be a clientele for that. But no one was getting rich off it, like Katz had told Mars. He had done another search of her apartment and came away not knowing any more than he had on entering the place. They would just have to wait until she woke up. This was a frustrating case because he could seem to make no traction on any lead. He could not make Mitzi Gardner talk, and he had nothing to charge her with. There was absolutely not enough evidence. He knew that she had worked to frame her father, but he couldn't prove it. She had been amply rewarded with a new life, and yet, as he'd left her home, he'd also left behind a woman who was clearly racked by guilt. But that meant nothing in building a case. He would have to find a road to the legal truth somewhere else. It would not apparently go through Mitzi Gardner. He sat down on a chair in the kitchen and studied his possibilities. There weren't many, so they didn't take him long. He quickly settled on one. Sally Brimmer. She'd been killed for a reason. He had to find out what that reason was. And he could start in one of two places. He picked one, called Lancaster to meet him there, and set off. Chapter 59. Lancaster met Decker outside of Sally Brimmer's apartment building on the west side of town. It was a nondescript six-story structure wrapped in dull brick.
"How's Katz?"
Lancaster asked as she walked up to him.
"Still not conscious, but apparently out of danger."
"Well, that's good."
"Yeah, and it'll turn into great if she wakes up and tells us everything."
They walked into the building and rode the elevator up to the fourth floor. Lancaster had a key to Brimmer's apartment.
"It's already been gone over and nothing was found. But I'm not sure how thoroughly it was done. After all, we thought you were the target."
"I did too, until I stopped thinking I was."
They entered the apartment and looked around. Brimmer's job had not paid all that much, they both knew. But her apartment was well laid out and nicely furnished, with pillows and curtains and sturdy furniture and lovely oriental rugs over the hardwood floors. Decker looked at Lancaster. She said,
"Her parents have money. I was over here once for a holiday party and met them. Very nice people. They helped her out financially, I came to understand."
"Okay."
"They were devastated, obviously. They came to get her remains. The family's from the East Coast."
"How'd Brimmer end up here?"
"She went to college up the road from Burlington. Had a couple of PR jobs out of school. Her brother's a cop in Boston. I guess she got interested in that field from him. The department had an opening. She moved here and was doing some really good work. I doubt she would have stayed here long term, though. She had a lot of potential. And she was still so young."
"We all have a lot of potential, until we don't," noted Decker grimly.
"So what are we looking for?"
"Anything that seems to be relevant."
"Great. Thanks for the hint."
They went methodically from room to room, ending up in Brimmer's bedroom. Decker checked the attached bathroom while Lancaster went into the closet. After a few minutes, Lancaster called out,
"Hey, Decker."
He walked into the large closet to see Lancaster holding something up.
"What?"
he asked. She held the item up higher. It was a short-haired wig. Blonde. Decker lifted his gaze to Lancaster's. "You think Sally impersonated Susan Richards?" he said.
"I think she might have. It wasn't Gardner, and if it wasn't Katz, who else fits the description?"
"Sally was the right height and build," conceded Decker.
Lancaster fingered the wig.
"And this is nearly the cut and style of Susan Richards's hairdo, and from a distance with her back turned and an old woman looking out into the darkness, she could have been fooled."
Decker took the wig in his hand and looked it over. The memory came back to him effortlessly. Sally at the park. She had on a trench coat, gloves, and a hat. Exactly what the person leaving Richards's house was seen wearing.
"So if she participated in that, did she know Richards might be in that suitcase, either already dead or drugged?" he said.
"I can't believe she didn't know,"
replied Lancaster.
"But then the question becomes, why would she do it?"
"She was acting funny," said Decker, "when she interacted with me, before and after Richards went missing."
"Funny how?"
"Guilty, maybe. But then I just associated that with her having a fling with Natty."
"Guilt, then, but of a different nature."
Lancaster shook her head.
"Brimmer was such a straight arrow in my book. Why in the hell would she have become involved in something like this?"
"Well, we don't know for sure that she was. We found a wig that looks like Richards's hair. That could be a coincidence. Women do have wigs in their closets."
"That's true. And even if we find evidence of Sally's hair inside this wig, it'll prove nothing. If she's not involved, she presumably bought the wig to wear it."
"We have to find other proof. If she was paid off, we might be able to find a record of that in her financial accounts."
"And if she wasn't paid off?"
"Then someone might have coerced her into doing this."
"How?"
"Maybe someone who knew about her relationship with Natty."
"Well, that could be. They kept it pretty secret. Hell, I didn't know."
Lancaster took back the wig and placed it into an evidence bag she drew from her coat pocket.
"And you still think the motivation to kill Richards was to place blame for Hawkins's murder on her?"
"They had to cut that investigation off, Mary. The police start looking into Hawkins's claims, things could get dicey for whoever's behind all this. Her seeming to commit suicide was a good way to do that."
"Only it didn't work."
"They couldn't know that. They had to try, and Richards was their best bet for that."
"Why not Rachel Katz? She had a motive to kill Hawkins, too."
"That's right, she did. But I don't think they could afford to kill Katz."
"Why not? Someone ended up trying to kill her."
"That was later."
"So how'd they choose between the two women?"
"Look at it this way. Katz has prospered since the death of her husband. Richards hasn't."
"So you think Katz was involved with the murders 13 years ago?"
"I'm not going to go that far, Mary, but I think Katz ended up being useful. Richards didn't, so she was dispensable."
"What in the world is going on here, Decker?"
"Well, whatever it is, it's been going on for at least 13 years.
Dating back to the murders?"
"Actually, sometime before them, probably."
Lancaster looked at the bagged evidence.
"I'm going to have to tell Natty about this. He's in charge of the investigation now."
"I don't think he's going to take us suspecting Sally of being an accomplice in Richards's murder very well."
"That's an understatement. Unless he's involved as well."
She added with a sudden thought.
"Do you think he might be?"
"I think everybody's a suspect, until they're not."
Chapter 60.
"How's it going down there?"
Alex Jameson asked. It was the next evening, and Decker was in his room at the Residence Inn, on his phone.
"It's going. How about you?"
"Long road ahead, I'm afraid." "Not making much headway. Bogart is missing your horsepower."
"Did he say that?"
"I can tell."
"He laid down the law to me when we last spoke. I'm not sure I'll have a place on the task force when I'm done here."
He said this in part to get it off his chest, but also to get Jameson's reaction.
I'm not sure about that either, Decker.
His spirits plunged. It had occurred to him that he did want to go back to the FBI after this was over. Now that might not be possible. I guess I can see that, he said.
Look, if it were up to Bogart, I think you'd be okay. But he's got bosses, too. And they know you're still in Burlington despite orders to the contrary, and they're not happy about it. Bogart went out on a limb for you, Decker, on a number of occasions. He shielded you from heat from the higher-ups. Now, we all know what you've done for the Bureau and the number of lives you've saved in the past, but that will not always save you, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thanks for your candor, Alex. I appreciate it.
I'd expect the same from you if our positions were reversed.
Not to change the subject, but if I send you a list of companies, could you find time to check them out?
Decker, are you kidding me?
I know, Alex, I know, but it's really important.
And what I'm currently doing isn't?
No, I didn't mean it that way, only we don't have the resources that the FBI does.
There was such a pregnant pause that he thought she might have hung up on him. Then finally,
email me them and I'll see what I can do.
Thanks, Alex, I appreciate it.
He sent her the names of the companies and then lay down on his bed. The wind was picking up outside, which probably meant another storm was coming. Since it was getting colder, they might get some sleet or a dusting of snow with it. Decker wrapped himself more tightly in his coat because the Residence Inn didn't have the best heating system in the world. It was like it only had the capacity to push heat a certain distance into the hotel before giving up and letting the majority of the unfortunate guests fend for themselves. He didn't miss the Ohio winters. The East Coast had its share of cold weather for sure, but there was nothing to stop the wind here. It beat relentlessly across the land. But still, this was his hometown, his home state. He had played for the mighty Buckeyes and then, albeit briefly, the Cleveland Browns. He was a product of the Midwest. He never got too high, never got too low. He looked at the world realistically. He was a jeans and beer kind of guy. He could never fit inside a Ferrari. Not that he would ever want to. He always tried to do the right thing. He helped others when they needed it. And he tracked down killers nonstop. And that was pretty much the sum total of Amos Decker. He lifted his hands from his pockets and rubbed his temples. He scrunched his eyes closed. Something was funny up there. He felt a pang of anxiety start up from deep within him. He lurched up and went into the bathroom and drank handfuls of water in an effort to calm himself down. He tried to push back visions of volcanic masses of memory loops cascading down on him, but he was powerless to stop his own mind from tormenting him. He lay back on his bed, shuddered once as though he might be sick, and then drew a long, deep breath. With that one physical machination, the anxiety left him.
Maybe I should take up yoga. A downward dog every morning might do the trick.
He glanced out the window and decided that he was hungry. And he only had one place in mind to go. He drove to the American Grill. He had never answered the question of why Rachel Katz still owned it, and he didn't believe it was because it was her husband's first business venture. He walked in, got a table, and sat and perused the menu. The place was about 3/4 full at 7 o'clock. Most of the clientele seemed to be blue-collar, some with spouses, some with kids. There were a few teens wolfing down burgers and wings. On the big screen TV was an ESPN show where the panel was talking about the upcoming Sunday of football. Decker looked out the window at the building across the street. It was a bank, the one where Don Richards had worked. On the other side of the grill was an apartment building. Decker knew this because he had briefly lived there when he returned to Burlington after his football career ended. He eyed the interior of the grill. Large model prop planes and ships and cars suspended from the ceiling. Pictures of old movie stars framed on the walls, humorous signs dotted in between them, dusty fake plants standing in corners, a buffet bar set up in the middle of the place. The waitstaff wore white shirts and black pants. The kitchen was through a set of double swing doors, restrooms on the right for men and the left for women, greeter station right at the front door, computer stands at the back where the waitstaff logged in their orders. Full bar at the very back of the restaurant where multiple TV screens were bolted to the wall,
The carpet underneath was a dull green, designed not to show dirt or stains. The tables were a heavy wood. There were four topper tables set up along the perimeter. He could smell an alchemy of fried foods, cheap beer, and sweet desserts. It was Americana at its monotone finest. It wasn't all that profitable, and yet it was still in business when Katz had far more glamorous projects on which to spend her time. Decker ordered his food, a Reuben and fries, and a Michelob to top it off. He once more almost looked around guiltily for Jameson to suddenly pop up and reprimand him. The sandwich was good, juicy enough without being all over the place. The fries were warm and crisp. The beer tasted fine going down. He eyed the table where he'd seen Earl Lancaster with his friend. He hadn't expected his talk with Mary at the football field to have carried the day, but he was happy that they were giving it another shot. This happy thought receded when he dwelled for a few moments on what the next few years of his former partner's life might be like. The brain was the most unique organ humans possessed. Decker knew that better than most. When it failed you, it was unlike any other breakdown in your body. If your heart went, so did you, 6 feet under. Gone, but remembered, hopefully fondly, for who you had been. But if your brain went, you were also gone, though your body lingered and became dependent on someone else to take care of it. And that would be your loved one's last impression of you, even though it wasn't really you, at least not anymore. Decker came out of these musings in time to glance up. Through the window of the door going into the kitchen, he caught a man watching him. It was just a quick look, and then the man was gone. The only thing Decker could really observe was dark hair and a pair of penetrating eyes. Decker, the cop, was instantly intrigued. He had spent almost his entire adult life as a policeman, reading people's faces, separating the bad from the good, the scared from those trying to hide something. It was not a skill he could teach someone else. It really had become almost instinctual over time. It was a million little things processed together to spit out something close to a useful deduction. And his antennae were quivering. He slowly eased his phone out of his pocket, turned the flash off, and while ostensibly checking his phone screen, snapped a series of pictures of the waitstaff flitting around the restaurant. He recognized the waitress from the last time he was here, and trailing behind her was the young man named Daniel, who was learning the craft of being a waiter. When he put the phone away, he glanced over at the kitchen double doors and thought he had seen someone at the window there. Had it been the same guy watching him? Decker motioned to the young woman who had been serving him. Daniel had gone into the kitchen. She came over.
You want anything else?
No, the food was great.
I'll get your bill.
Looks like you're hustling tonight.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy sometimes.
Been working here long?
About a year.
Last time I was in, you had a trainee following you around.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, that's how we learned the job.
So you did that too?
No, I already had several years of waitressing experience. Only reason I got the job. But it's kind of silly if you ask me.
What is?
Training all these people. They never stay. 2 or 3 months on the job, and then they're gone. I guess some people don't respect hard work or the time and money it takes to train somebody.
Yeah, you're right. That doesn't make much sense.
I won't be working here much longer, so it doesn't matter to me. I got another job offer, and I'm taking it. Better pay and benefits.
Great.
My mother used to work here, about 10 years ago. She was the one who told me to apply. Pay's not great. Not that any wait jobs is, but the tips aren't bad. Especially on the weekends, when the guys get drunk and open their wallets. Makes up a little for all the stupid stuff they say. But if they get handsy, and a lot of them do, I bring the hammer down.
Good for you. Did your mother work here long?
No, I mean she wanted to. But after about a year, they let her go.
Why's that?
They never told her. Then later a friend of hers was hired to be a waitress here. About a year after that, they let her go too. No reason.
That is really odd.
Well, it's not my problem. I'll be out of here. Come to think of it, I've been here about a year. I guess if I wasn't leaving, they might fire me too.
Maybe the management has changed since your mom's time.
No, it hasn't.
Come again?
Bill Payton is the manager now, and he was the manager when my mom was here. She didn't like him. He was always watching everything so closely.
I guess that's what managers get paid to do.
I guess. And the kitchen staff, they haven't changed either all that time.
How do you know that?
Because they are the same people when my mom was here. I told her some of their names when I first started working, and she recognized them all. They were here from when the place opened, for all I know.
You mean the cooks and busboys and all that?
Right.
What are they like?
What do you mean?
Old, young, men, women, Ohio farm stock?
All guys, and no, I don't think any of them are from Ohio. To tell the truth, I'm not sure where they're from. They don't interact with us much. Age-wise, they're probably in their 50s.
Long time to be a short order cook or a busboy.
I guess they're content with what they have. You get in a rut, you know. That's why I'm getting out. And I'm taking coding classes, too. I don't want to be a waitress my whole life.
Hey, well, good luck with your new gig.
Thanks. I'll bring your check.
He gave her a nice tip and left. On the way out, he looked at the plaque next to the door. It read, Manager, Bill Payton. He looked back into the restaurant. He had never been a regular here, but he'd been here a few times before his life had fallen apart. He had never considered it anything special until now. And now something that he had found at Katz's office took on a heightened importance. Chapter 61. What are you doing, Decker? It wasn't Lancaster asking him this question as he looked up from the document he was studying in the small conference room at the police station. It was Blake Natty, looking disheveled and exhausted.
Just the nuts and bolts of detective work. Nothing personal, Natty, but you look like shit.
Natty wiped his stubbly chin, ran a hand through his unkempt hair, and attempted to tighten the knot on his tie before giving up. He sat down across from Decker and clasped his hands in front of him.
Fran threw me out.
Decker sat back and slowly took this in.
What happened?
She found out.
About you and Brimmer?
Natty nodded.
How?
Some bastard emailed her pictures of us together in my car.
You could have just been driving somewhere.
We weren't driving.
Right. But she has to know what happened to Sally.
She does. But I don't think it mattered. You see, he stopped, looking nervous.
Was Sally not the first time?
Asked Decker.
No. I screwed up before. Fran took me back, but I don't think she's going to do it this time. I heard Sally's family came to take her remains.
Natty nodded. I wanted to go to her funeral, but I didn't think it would be appropriate.
You're probably right about that.
Decker shifted in his seat.
I'm sorry about all this, Natty.
Natty said nothing. He just stared down at the table.
Look, had Sally been acting, I don't know, weird lately?
Natty glanced up.
Weird? What do you mean by weird? Like she had something on her mind.
We were having a fling, Decker. She probably had that on her mind.
I don't mean just that. The thing is, when she agreed to help me, I could tell there was something on her mind, and it wasn't her relationship with you. I already knew about that.
What else could it be?
I just thought she might have mentioned something to you.
Decker would have much preferred to come straight out and ask the guy, but he couldn't. Right now, he didn't know who was involved in what, and he didn't want to give any of his suspicions away unnecessarily. Natty rubbed the back of his neck and seemed to mull over the question.
She seemed a little jumpy lately. I just thought it was because you saw us together that day. Well, you made it pretty easy for me. You just drove up and started yelling at me while she was in the car.
At first, Decker thought Natty might snap back at this comment, but he didn't. Maybe Brimmer's death and his wife's kicking him out had changed the man. I was the big dog here, Decker, before you came along. I made detective grade before you, and great things were expected of me. You did your job, Natty. You worked your cases, caught bad guys, just like I did. Come on, there was no comparison. You were born for this. I'm not sure I was born for it, but right now it's the only thing I have in my life. Natty looked pained by this simple, straightforward admission. When your family got killed, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. Nothing like that had ever happened here. And then, I'm ashamed to admit it, I relished watching you hit rock bottom. Every day you went lower and lower, and more to the point, you were no longer competition for me in the department. Decker said nothing to this. He could have erupted over this baldly cynical statement, but he chose not to. And then a funny thing happened. We weren't closing nearly the number of cases we used to. And then the shooting at the high school happened, and we couldn't make a dent in finding out who did it. And then you came and solved the whole thing. I didn't have much choice, Natty, seeing as how I was directly connected to the whole thing. But then you got the gig with the FBI, and you were gone again. I did some cases with Mary, and things were going okay. Maybe I'd get promoted up the ladder. He paused and chewed on his tongue for a moment. And then this thing with Sally started. It was stupid. We both knew it was, but we couldn't stop. He glanced up at Decker. We only had sex a couple of times. I wanted to do it more, but Sally, well, she was funny about that. You don't owe me an explanation on any of this, Natty. And then you came back to town, and this whole shit with Hawkins started up again. When I saw you back, I just freaked. To be honest, I thought I was rid of you forever. And then there you were. I came back to visit my family's graves. I didn't ask for Hawkins to walk up to me and say he was innocent. But for that, I'd be long gone from here for at least another year. Natty cleared his throat and sat back. I've been a cop longer than I haven't been a cop. It's been my whole life. I'm good at it, I think. But I'm not you. No one ever said you were, replied Decker. And you wouldn't want to be me. Well, now Sally's dead and my wife is gone. Luckily, the kids are pretty much grown, so all I got is this, he added, looking around the room. When this case is done, Natty, I'll be gone. You can have it all to yourself. Natty grunted and gave a hollow chuckle. I'm finding out that my problems run a lot deeper than my jealousy of you, Decker. Then face them and try to work through them. You've seen a lot of shit in your life. So have I. Life is never perfect. You make the most of what you have. You can sink into self-pity or you can rise above it. Why don't you choose to rise above it, starting right now, and really think about my question about Sally. Was anything bothering her? Natty looked at him suspiciously. Why do you keep asking that? Did you find something that... Sally had reddish hair. I know that, said Natty, looking confused. She ever wear a wig? A wig? What are you being funny? No, a blonde wig, cut short. No, why? Why would she wear a wig? Do women even wear wigs anymore? I don't know, maybe some do. Well, not Sally. At least not that I ever saw. She had really nice hair. Why are you asking me that? Did you find a wig? In her closet. What were you doing in her closet? Lancaster actually found it. We were searching her place looking for a motive for murder. But you were the target, not her. Decker shook his head. The guy who shot Katz was the same guy who shot Brimmer. We recently found out he was a trained sniper. He had a laser scope that could have nailed me from 1,000 yards away. No way the guy misses a shot from a 20th that distance. Look at me, Natty. I'm the size of a barn. You could have made that shot with your damn pistol. Natty slumped back in his chair. But why in the hell would anyone want to kill Sally? She was a good person. She had no enemies. That you know of. Natty glanced sharply up at him. And what does the wig have to do with this? The wig pretty much exactly matches Susan Richards' hairdo. It took a few moments for this to connect with Natty.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Brimmer put on a wig to impersonate Richards? Yeah, I am. I think Richards' body was in that suitcase. It was all a show for Richards' neighbor, to make us think she'd done a runner, and then committed suicide. You're saying that Sally killed Richards? No fucking way. I've run into a lot of murderers, Decker. So have you. Sally couldn't have hurt a fly. I don't think she killed Richards. She might not have even known what was in the suitcase. It might have been locked. But I think she was forced to impersonate Richards and leave in her car with the suitcase. At some point, others took the suitcase and then left the body where we found it.
Why would Sally be part of something like that?
Maybe somebody was blackmailing her.
About what?
One guess, Natty.
Realization spread over his features.
Our fling? Someone tells her they'll spill the truth to your wife unless Sally puts on the wig. Otherwise, she'd be ruined professionally. They didn't have to tell her that Richards was dead, or in the suitcase. She just had to drive it away in the car.
Decker paused.
So that's why I want to know if Brimmer was acting funny.
But Sally was killed before they found Richards.
But Sally could have already known she was dead.
Natty took a few moments to process all this. Then the detective in him seemed to win out, and he sat forward, his brow furrowed. I thought it was just her being nervous about our relationship. But we were having a drink at her place one night. This was shortly after Richards disappeared. Decker sat forward.
And?
And she wanted to know what I thought about Richards' disappearance. I told her maybe she'd killed Hawkins and had gone on the run.
What was her reaction to that?
She didn't seem to buy it, if you want the truth. I actually picked up on that and asked her if she had any theories.
Did she?
She said that sometimes people looked at things from the wrong way round, almost like looking in a mirror. She even gave an example. In the mirror, you lift up your right hand, but in the reflection, your mind tricks you into thinking
that it's your left, finished Decker.
Natty nodded.
What do you think she meant by that?
Decker didn't answer, though he had an idea of exactly what the dead woman might have meant. Chapter 62. On his bed at the Residence Inn, Decker laid out all the construction plans for the American Grill that David Katz had built about 15 years ago. The plans seemed pretty normal for such a restaurant build-out, but he didn't recognize the name of the architect set forth on the plans. In fact, the address of the business showed that it was from out of state. He called Lancaster. She was at home. He asked her to put Earl on.
"What's up, Amos?" said the man when he got on the phone.
"Got some construction-related questions for you."
Earl seemed relieved that the questions were not of a more personal nature.
"Okay, shoot."
"You remember the American Grill project?"
"The Katz's restaurant."
"Right."
"Yeah, I mean, I didn't work on it, but I remember it going up."
"Did you try to work on it?"
"I didn't have my GC license back then, but I had my finished carpentry business. I put in a bid to do some of the interior work, but didn't get it."
"Do you know who the GC was?"
"Funny thing you mention that. I didn't know the GC. Nobody did, because Katz used a company from out of town. Hell, out of state, I think."
"What, you mean the workers, too?"
"Yeah. Nobody local that I know worked on that project."
"Why would he have done it that way? Wouldn't it have been more costly?"
"Well, you'd think so. Bringing guys in like that, they have to live and eat somewhere. Guys who live here, we just go home at night. So yeah, you'd have to pay more."
"Was there no capacity back then? Did he have to go out of state?"
"Hell no. That was one of the slackest periods I can remember. Everyone was looking for work. When they rejected my proposal, I even went around to Katz's office to see if there was anything else I could do. Mary and I hadn't been married all that long, and we wanted to have a family. I was trying to build up my business, and Katz had blown into town with a lot of money and ambition, and I was anxious to get on that train."
"And what happened when you met with him?"
"I didn't actually meet with him. I met with one of his people. Forget the name.
He told me in not such polite terms that Mr. Katz had his own crew. Well, that pissed me off a little bit. I mean, why ask for proposals from local people if you're going to use your own crew?
What did that guy say?
I gotta tell you, Decker, I'm no wallflower. I'm a big, strong guy, but this guy scared the bejesus out of me just the way he was looking at me.
Can you describe him? I know it's been a long time.
No, I can. That's the sort of impression he made on me. He was about my height and weight, dark hair, dark eyes, and I don't mean this to sound un-PC or anything, but, well, he just didn't seem to be American. At least not in my mind.
Did he have an accent?
Not that I could tell, but I'm not real good about picking up on things like that.
So you left it there?
What else could I do? I couldn't force the guy to use me.
So all the work was done with non-local people?
Far as I know. Well, I take that back. The excavation work was done by Fred Palmer. He's local.
Excavation?
Yeah, for the foundation and everything. That can involve some heavy equipment. Katz may not have wanted to truck that in.
Palmer's still around?
Oh, yeah. I got his number. I use him on projects. He's a good guy. Does first-rate work.
Earl gave him the contact info.
Thanks. Do you remember the construction work going on for the grill?
Yeah. I'd drive by it every once in a while.
Anything strike you as unusual about it?
Well, they had a high fence and security around the place.
That's not unusual at a construction site, is it?